Hey, this is Thomas Q. Jones, former UVA All-American running back, and you're listening to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show. Wahoo! Wah.
It's Friday. We're in Virginia. That means it's snowing. Chris Graham and Jerry Ratcliffe here on the Jerry Ratcliffe Snow. I say a show snow. I did it. Hey, Jerry, is it snowing over your way? It's there's flurries my way. How about you over in Charlottesville?
Same thing, Chris. We got flurries going. Nothing too serious at the moment, which I don't think it's going to get bad, but it's just annoying. I've had snow on my lawn for, I think, like 20 days in a row.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's the thing here. And I was just sneaking a peek at the future forecast, and I think it's late next week, like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Temperatures get up in the 50s and 60s, and then we get some rain, so it might wash some of it away, but it is like permafrost out there. Like it's packed down maybe 3 or 4 inches tall in my backyard, and it's just like an ice rink. I could play hockey out in my backyard.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, it was I thought for a while it was going to go away, and then temperatures kept dipping, and again, yeah, like an ice hockey rink.
There are some mounds in parking lots, retail store parking lots, that might not melt until like May. They're just so tall and thick and everything else.
I remember several years ago, we had such incredible snowfalls that the Barracks Road Shopping Center had a snow mountain in its parking lot, and they were the merchants there put up a contest. Anybody could correctly predict the day the last ounce of it melted, won a big jackpot. And yeah, I think it was in the middle of the summer, it seems like.
Wow, yeah, that's not usual for this part of the world, but every few years we get that. So it's not going to impact UVA sports this weekend. Virginia basketball, we'll talk about as we get towards the second part of our podcast here. We'll talk about Virginia basketball up in the Chicago area, South Bend, Indiana, for the game with Notre Dame. Let's talk some football first, though. Coach Tony Elliott and his staff now completed, and one guy in particular has been busy with offers both to some transfers from the transfer portal and then some preps. Get us up to speed, Jerry, on UVA recruiting and particularly on the lines.
Yeah, Garrett, TJ, heading into this recruiting period, I think they had 8 returning offensive linemen, a few of them who had got some experience as backups this season. And then they moved another guy who was a defensive end over to the offensive line. So he had 9 guys in his position room, so to speak, heading into this recruiting period. And voila, they have 16 as of today. I saw a tweet from him today where he said, I'm heading home. And I said, you need a vacation, because that guy's been all over the place, busting his hump, trying to find guys who can protect Brennan Armstrong's back, literally. And what an amazing job he's done. They almost every commitment they've had has been an offensive lineman. They've added 7 in like a week. Just pretty amazing stuff. A couple of these guys are through the transfer portal, who had some experience at Dartmouth, was one in particular, John Paul Flores. It was the latest offensive lineman. He played left tackle up there and started for 2 years and has 2 years of eligibility left. So a lot of these guys are high school kids. And I know one that really caught people's eye was a kid out in Utah, believe it or not. Snoop, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. I guess it's Amama.
We'll go with that. 6'5".
Yeah. High schooler. He's an offensive guard, and he says he can play anywhere along the line, but the fact that he has an 82-inch wingspan makes me believe they might put him at tackle, because those long arms can ward off pass rushers in a heartbeat. And they beat up beat out BYU, his hometown or home state school, and Miami and Syracuse and a bunch of others to land this guy. So what a haul by TJ, just to maybe he's done recruiting for the rest of the year. I don't
maybe you want to get all wrapped up. Yeah. I mean, but he's, you mentioned John Paul Flores. He was an all Ivy League guy at Dartmouth. Mark Hollensteiner, a commit from Georgetown, was boy, he had some offer. He had offers from Michigan State, Oklahoma State, Colorado, among others. So, I mean, these were guys that when we saw their names pop up on the transfer portal, just without any inkling that Virginia might be in the play, those were guys that were wanted by quite a few schools. And so, you know, you figure that you plug those guys in, some of the returning guys maybe get a shot, and then maybe a couple of these young guys get a shot at some playing time next year.
Absolutely. That guy you were referring to, Mac Hollensteiner, 6'6", 310, has 2 years of eligibility left, as you mentioned. And you know, if Michigan State and Colorado State are after him, he's got to have some potential. And another kid down in South Carolina, high schooler, Houston Curry, big offensive tackle, 6'7", 265. And, yeah, they got a couple guys on the other side of the ball, too, mostly some pass rushers. Jack Camper, Michigan State defensive end transferred. He played in 27 games. 6'5", 250 as a pass rusher, and a kid from Hoover, Alabama, Hoover High School, one of the best, maybe the best program annually or down in that state. He's a 3- and 4-star pass rusher, 6'5", 250. He had committed to Illinois back in November and decommitted after he took a visit there, which he was about as impressed with Illinois as I was the time I went up there, apparently. That stadium, I got there and it was, I will never forget it. It poured rain all day long. I got there and it was, you had to walk like half a mile to get to the stadium through the parking lot. And once you got up under the stadium looking for some relief from just a driving rainstorm, the stadium had so many leaks in it, you were getting soaked under the stadium. So apparently he had the same impression I did a few years ago. But they got some guys, man. I tell you, it looks like the two places they needed it most, again, the offensive line and some potentially lethal pass rushers, is a great place to start for this recruiting class, which Tony Elliott will expound upon with the media next week. We haven't had any contact with them since the press conference that you and I and Scott and your partner Crystal all attended. So he's going to meet up with us twice next week on Zoom, Monday, to talk about hiring the staff he did and what he likes about them. And then Wednesday, it's National Signing Day, and looks like he'll have some. We wondered what he would have to talk about. He's got a lot to talk about.
All of a sudden, yeah. And I like how you pointed out in one of your stories on JerryRatcliffe.com, especially on the offensive line, the size of the guys. Six of the seven guys who've committed to Coach TJ in the last week are 6'5 or taller. Five of the seven guys are 300 pounds or more. So he obviously was looking for size.
Exactly. And I'm trying to remember who it was. Maybe it was Tony. No, I don't know if it was Tony Elliott or somebody, but whoever it was had pointed out when they had seen Virginia, they were blown away by the length and the size of other players. I think it was Tony that day at his press conference that he had mentioned the size of Virginia. So they're continuing in that vein.
something, something Coach TJ obviously preaches. He's been around for a while now, 6 years on the staff, and now transitioning from Coach Mendenhall to Coach Elliott.
Looking for a great dining experience in Charlottesville? Look no further than the Aberdeen Barn. The Barn has been family owned and operated since 1965, with Terry and Angela providing great atmosphere and mouth-watering food at Virginia's Big Time Steakhouse. Enjoy the fine dining or relax in the Sportsman's Bar, a fantastic place to wind down and socialize, surrounded by flat-screen televisions tuned to the latest sporting events. You never know who you might bump into at the Aberdeen Barn, where all the greatest Cavaliers have dined over the decades and keep coming back for the delicious menu and good times. Check it out online at aberdeenbarn.com or call 434-296-4630.
Maybe time now to switch our attention to basketball. Boy, a lot has changed since Monday. Virginia played on Big Monday, the 64-52 win over Louisville. Louisville no longer has Chris Mack as its head coach. That's one little bit of news. And then, of course, Virginia getting ready for Notre Dame. Anything you want to mention there on the Chris Mack situation? Boy, that kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I don't think any of us covering that game. I don't think there were that many of us there, actually, in terms of media. But, how many of us would have even – had a clue that that was going to be the last game he would coach at Louisville. I knew that they were struggling and not living up to the preseason expectations. He didn't know that he had kind of lost the team. I guess one of the Louisville writers or TV people or somebody after the game asked him on his Zoom, which was going on at the same time as Tony Bennett's press conference, so we didn't hear about it. Somebody asked him something to the effect of if they had any faith that Chris Mack was going to move the team forward. And he said, I can't comment on that. And I guess that started the onslaught, but I didn't have any idea, even though they had been booed off their own court by the Louisville fans, the largest crowd of the season, and a loss to Notre Dame that Sunday. Before they came to Charlottesville. And that, that's not a good sign. That was the largest crowd they've had this season, and it was only like 16,000. I know you've been to the Yum Center, and that's an impressive arena. That might be the largest arena in the ACC.
I think it holds 23,000. So, yeah, when you have –
except for Syracuse, of course.
Yeah, when you have one-third of your place empty, and that's a place, man, they show up for anything. So, yeah, that said a lot right there.
Yeah, and I think they have like a 10-year waiting list for tickets or something. So they're available now, apparently. But, and I hadn't had a lot of dealings with Chris Mack. He always seemed like an upfront, pretty good guy. They had a lot of faith in him when they – fired Rick Pitino and then had an interim coach for a year that didn't really work out. And they took Chris Mack, who I think his wife is from Louisville. And they brought him in from Xavier expecting big things. And that's a proud old program, Chris, as you well know. And they used to be a constant national threat. And they haven't been in that league in quite a while. So even with Pitino, the last few years he was there, he had trouble getting it done in the postseason. But it's going to be interesting to see who they come up with going forward. I've heard a few names that all had some association to Louisville in the past as maybe an assistant coach or something to that effect. But it'll be fun to see who they end up with, because again they've had some great programs, and with Denny Crum and Pitino, it's been a while.
Yeah, and without a president, without an athletics director, that's the whole situation's a mess. You almost think they have to have those jobs filled before they can fill the coaching job, because, boy, I wouldn't want to take the job if I were the kind of coach who would be considered for a job like the caliber of Louisville. If I was hired by somebody and then a new AD was hired over top of me that wasn't bought into me. So they've got some work to do there at that place. And cause we're even hearing as you noted in your scatter shooting column that Scott Satterfield's there's even some whispers about his job. So gosh, it's a really messy situation with Louisville Athletics right now.
Yeah. It's been that way for a while. I know Patino added some stability there. He's Hall of Fame coach. He's winning now up in New England, but you always knew they were going to be a pretty solid team when he was coaching on the court. You weren't exactly sure what was going to happen off the court as that spilled over into the Chris Mack era with he had to miss the first six games of the season on suspension because of that. What did they term that? Was it fraud or
extortion?
Extortion.
Yeah, Dino Gaudio got convicted for pleaded guilty to extortion. Ooh. You don't want those words associated with your program, do you?
it's a mess. A lot of people in the ACC are not real happy with Louisville. I've seen it called some things that we really can't say on this podcast. So I guess we could say them, but might lose a few listeners if we did.
We'll avoid them, but just your imagination doesn't have to go too wild to figure out what they might be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Louisville has not done well as far as what we were advertised in terms of, the league generally full of schools that avoid these kind of issues, and Louisville's had them all in the last 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, I feel sorry for one of my friends out there who was one of the top SIDs, sports information directors. I guess they call them media relations directors now, but one of the best in the business over the span of his career is Kenny Klein, who is an old school SID and does it the right way. And everybody I know thinks if he's not the best, he's certainly among the top few in the whole country. He's been there for a long, long time. And I feel bad for him because he's had to deal with more unpopular press conferences than I'm sure he'd like to. So hang in there, Kenny.
There you go. That's right. Hey, at least you got a good guy on the job to deal with the Patinos and Petrinos and fraud cases and extortion cases. Man, that's not a good job if you're an SID or a media relations guy, but at least you have somebody good to deal with that. So so Virginia plays Notre Dame tomorrow night, 6 o'clock ACC Network. And boy, this Notre Dame team, when I was researching them today, and they started 4-5, which I mean, I didn't realize this, Jerry, that Mike Bray has not been to an NCAA tournament since 2017. They've had some lean years of late.
Yeah.
And since that 4-5 start, now that 4-5 start included a win over Kentucky. But since the 4-5 start, they've been 9-1. Their one loss was a loss at Virginia Tech in a game that was pretty much a tie game with about a minute to go. This is one of the hotter teams in the country right now, this Notre Dame team. And Virginia gets them in South Bend. So tough task ahead for the Hoos.
Yeah, and they're undefeated at home.
Yeah.
They used to call it the ACC, but the something athletic something center. Now I think they call it the Joyce Center or something else. I think maybe somebody threw some money in there and they revamped it. It's a really nice arena. It's right there on campus. And if you ever get a chance to go there for a basketball game, get there early and go around and look at all the exhibits they have in that arena. They've got amazing stuff, a lot of it football oriented, believe it or not, but some pretty cool stuff if you're a fan. Even if you're not a Notre Dame fan, you will appreciate the exhibits because it's a lot of Irish sports history and those things, and they have a pretty beautiful history there. I think they're 8-0 or 9-0 at home, and I watched their game couple of nights ago against NC State, and it was neck and neck going into the second half. And the big guy, is it, I'm trying to remember his name, is it Leshefsky? Leshefsky, yeah. Who I think in one of the two matchups against Virginia last year, I think it was a game at JPJ. I think he had 30 points.
Yeah, 28. He was 8 for 11 from the field. Yeah, he had some big games against us last year. Yeah.
And he single-handedly blew open that game. He's not the best three-point shooter on the team, but he's in the top 12 in the country in three-point shooting. And he knocked down two threes in a row. And then on the next time down the floor, had an opening and drove from the top of the free throw circle and slammed a mighty slam. He was on an 8-0 scoring run himself and just blew the game open, and State never recovered from it. And so he's one guy to watch out for. And then I guess the guard, his name escapes me at the moment.
Prentice Hubb, the point guard?
Yeah. No, gosh, what is his
name? Dane Goodwin.
Goodwin. I think he's the top, he might be the top three-point shooter in the country, if not he's in the top five.
48.9%. Leshefsky's 46.5%. Yeah, you watch those guys. Watch
so
for
essentially
those
49% from three-point land. So
yeah,
from him. And he had an impact on that game too. But those two guys can single-handedly kill you if you're not if you leave them open and give them opportunities. And certainly Mike Bray, as much as he loves the three-point line, has given them the green light. And the fact that Virginia, I think, ranks somewhere around 270-something in the country in three-point field goal percentage defense means that they probably will get a few opportunities in Saturday's game.
Yeah, when I looked at I went into the Synergy Sports data to get a sense of their play calls and how they do things. Goodwin is lights out. I mean, you mentioned the 48.9% from three, a spot up guy. His effective field goal percentage on spot ups is 79.4% because of the extra factor of threes that go in off screens. And then he actually is a post up guy too. He's a 6'6" kind of small forward, big guard, and they'll use him in post up situations too. Leshefsky's only averaging, it's interesting, he's only averaging 8.9 points a game this year. He was averaging 13.3 last year, but he's still, his shooting percentages are all pretty much all the same from last year. It's just less touches because there's other offensive weapons out there for them. He plays the five, and he's going to be an interesting, tough matchup for Virginia because they also have a transfer from Yale, Paul Atkinson, who's more of a traditional back-to-the-basket kind of player, 6'9 guy, 11.4 points, 6.2 rebounds a game, 61% from the field, doesn't shoot threes. He's all post stuff. But I imagine that Tony Bennett will want to use the fives on him defensively, either Caden Shedrick or Francisco Cafaro, depending on who's in the game, on Atkinson. But then that means that Jaden Gardner has to guard Leshefsky and giving up 4 or 5 inches, either on those outside shots or if they want to post him up. You know, then you have the problem with Goodwin. You've got another 6'5 guard, Blake Wesley, that likely Beekman matches up with. Boy, this is a team that really presents a lot of matchup problems when you look at the roster.
It really does. And that's going to present a problem, I think. And, you know, Notre Dame has never been an easy place to play, but the fact that Mike Bray has gotten the students reinvigorated, he showed up in their dining hall unexpectedly a couple of times over the last 2 weeks and apparently was had the leprechaun mascot with him, and they were up jumping up on dining room tables and talking to the kids and asking them to come out, and they've responded, and he's got the students back in there and they're making a lot of noise, and it's become even a tougher place to play. And I'm glad he's having success because he was on the hot seat for a little while, as you mentioned, with that streak of not making the big dance. And he's one of the most congenial guys you'll ever run into. He's just a fun guy to have in the ACC. And the fact that they Virginia has had their number, though, I think I was looking at the streak. I think Virginia has won the last eight in a row. 11, I know, against them in the regular season. 16-2 all time. So, and 6-0 at Notre Dame, I believe. Yeah, and 6-0 at Notre Dame. I've been there a couple times for Virginia games there, and the Irish fans just can't believe that they're losing a home game, even to Virginia, as good as Virginia's been. But it's a tough place to play, and I think Tony was on the Packer and Durham show a couple of days ago, and I think somebody asked him if asked Mike Bray if he needed to remind his kids that they had had such a losing streak against Virginia. And Bray said, I don't think I have to remind them. I think they're very well aware of that.
Well, and
so I'm sure they would like to put that to bed.
Just like North Carolina did. North Carolina, I think, had lost seven straight until the beatdown they gave to Virginia in Chapel Hill a couple weeks ago. So the Virginia kids at least know that there's a circle around them. there's a bullseye on them from the opponent here. That doesn't make it any easier, though. This Notre Dame, even if there wasn't a bullseye because of the long losing streak at home, it's a pretty good Notre Dame team. This is like those mid-2010s Notre Dame teams that Bray had when he was that one year. They won 32 games. I mean, this is a team. I'm not sure they're quite that good, but this is a pretty good Notre Dame team with the matchup problems, especially with Leshefsky and Dane Goodwin. Those are two of the best players in the ACC.
And I read this preseason, I think, maybe back in the summer. I can't remember when it was, but Anthony Solomon, who played at Virginia back in the day and was on that 83-84 Final Four team, I believe, as a guard. And he got the nickname of Slow because I think they misspelled his name on his jersey, whoever put it in his Slaloman or Sloman, or I think it was Sloman that they left out an O. And so all his teammates and coaches kept calling him Slow, and he's kept that nickname ever since from even the media who covered him back in those days. There's a few of us still around. And he rejoined Bray's staff for, I think, like the third time, at least the second time. I believe the third time. And I read a stat that they have never advanced in the NCAA tournament unless Solomon was on his staff. So I'm sure maybe he's a little leprechaun in the pocket too for Mike Bray.
Either a good luck charm or something that he does, or combination of both, helps that program out. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it's Anthony, one of our guys from back in the day. You know, I thought I'd throw out there as we're maybe getting ready to wrap up from the Virginia side of things. We talked a lot about Notre Dame. From the Virginia side of things, I don't know that I have seen a player improve as much mid-season. You know, you'll see guys get better in the offseason, come back, and, you know, they'll have a jump shot, or, you know, they'll do whatever they got to do and make them play differently. Reese Beekman started the season out. He couldn't save his life to hit a jumper. And All of a sudden, he's shooting 50% from three over his last, I think, his 8 or 9 games. He's 10 of 20 from three, dating back to that Clemson game. And because he's doing that now, guys have to, you know, respect that. And he's getting around guys more. And he's getting, you know, he controlled the game the other night, the Louisville game, he shot the ball twice and had 11 assists and controlled the game, only shooting the ball twice. Boy, I just don't know that I've ever seen anyone improve from where he was in November and December to where he is now. He's different. He's a different guy.
He really is. And we all have kind of been expecting that to happen. We just wondered when. Because when he came in, he had dominated this state of Louisiana high school basketball for 3 or 4 years down in Baton Rouge. Although a lot of people keep calling him a raging Cajun. He quickly reminds people, hey, I'm from Milwaukee. I grew up in Milwaukee, not in Louisiana. But anyways, he's now becoming the complete player that Tony Bennett thought he would. And on both ends of the floor. And we always knew he was a great defensive player, quick hands, all that. And Tony told us down in Charlotte back in October that he's probably the most explosive player he's ever coached. And that says a lot, because he coached Justin Anderson, and we all remember how explosive he was to the basket. But Beekman it's amazing that his shot, and he told us, down in Charlotte, I think you and I, Chris, were talking to him over in the corner, or maybe I can't remember. Anyway, I remember him talking about that he had worked so hard on his jump shot all summer long, he and Kiay both. And it's now kicking in for him. And I wouldn't want to have to face him one-on-one on either end of the floor, because I saw the list of mid-season candidates for National Defensive Player of the Year. And I was shocked that his name wasn't on there, because he leads the ACC in steals. And he's kind of a lockdown defender to some degree. So, what a player.
He's allowing opponents to shoot 31.4% when they shoot against him. And he creates turnovers. This is all Synergy Sports stuff, not me digging all this up. But Synergy Sports says, in addition to holding opponents to 31.4% shooting, he forces turnovers on 23% of their uses. So you're not going to make shots, and you're going to turn the ball over a lot against the guy. He doesn't foul much. And then now on offense, he's knocking down shots. He's shooting 55% from the floor in his last 8 games, and then the 50% from 3. He's dishing out. You know, he had 11 assists the other night. He's averaging, I think it's close to 6 assists a game over his last 8. He might be the best two-way player in the ACC this year. And it's good to see. You're right, Jerry. From day one last year, we've been waiting to see this Reese Beekman we're finally seeing him play.
Yeah, and, if you're a Virginia fan, I guess that gives you hope going forward. These last 10 ACC games, the conference, it used to be a little bit of a division at the top, two or three teams, and now it just seems like one big clump, Chris.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's getting beat. And, you know, as Virginia hasn't been what a lot of the fans hoped it would be, they're still not that far out of first place in the ACC standing. So anybody's vulnerable any night, it seems like.
Yeah, I'm sure you maybe caught some of that game the other night. Florida State losing by double digits to Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech came in 1-6, I think, in the ACC and controlled that game. Yeah, anybody can lose to anybody on any given night. And, you know, it won't take much for this Virginia team at 6-4 midway through the ACC schedule. You know, if Beekman can keep playing, if Kiay Clark can be a little more consistent, if you can get more consistency out of Armon Franklin, Jaden Gardner, the two centers, I think, are playing fine for what Tony asked for his fives. If they can put it together, this Virginia team could surprise some folks.
Really could. Really could. And so it should be fun going forward to see what happens down the home stretch. Pretty good games, and I think we've both written some things about the net rankings, and Virginia jumped up a little bit after winning the other night, and they've got some work to do, but they do have some teams ahead of them on the schedule that could, if they can win, pretty good, starting with Notre Dame, then they play Miami twice, they play Duke twice, they play Florida State here. They play down at Virginia Tech. So there are opportunities on that schedule if they can take advantage of it.
If you're in Virginia's place in terms of the NET, what you need is games that mean something. And all those games, I mean, you know, when you start breaking down into the quadrants 1, 2, 3, and 4, I think I figured out 7 of the 10 games could be quad 1 games starting tomorrow. your work's cut out for you. All you got to do is go out there and play some basketball now, but there's no excuses. The chance is there. If this Virginia team can succeed against the schedule they've got remaining, they could sneak their way into the NCAA tournament, I think.
I agree. And before we sign off, I want to give you some kudos. I know you've got a really cool gig tomorrow, and I'm proud of you. I think you should tell fans what you're going to be doing.
Yeah, yeah. I will be filling in tomorrow. I'll be the play-by-play announcer on ESPN Plus for VMI versus East Tennessee State in Southern Conference action, a couple of teams that are fighting for position in the SoCon. You know, that VMI team gave Wake Forest all it could handle back middle, late December. Actually had a double-digit lead in the second half before losing late down in Winston-Salem. Yeah. So, yeah, 1 o'clock tomorrow on ESPN Plus, I'll be the play-by-play guy. I'm chuckling because I haven't done a game of any kind since spring baseball. I did a full schedule of baseball back for ESPN Plus and ESPN 3. I took the fall off. And so, yeah, now I only got the word yesterday. I'm sort of a COVID replacement. I'm on a COVID emergency contract here or something, but I'm filling in and looking forward to testing it out here. Get the pipes cleaned and get them working again tomorrow. So anybody out there, you know, Virginia doesn't play. We don't tip off Virginia and Notre Dame until 6. If you're bored, tune me in at 1 o'clock. And promise to be gentle. I may mispronounce a name or two. I may miss a player too early, but midway through the second half, or through the first half, maybe by the second TV timeout, I might hit my stride and kind of know what I'm doing.
You'll be fine, man. You're seasoned pro. but I encourage people to tune in too and listen to Chris.
You're not going to mistake me for Mike Breen or anybody like that, but I'll do a fair job, and it's fun. Hey, it's a cool thing. With somebody, you know, I learned this long ago. If somebody asks you, you want to be the play by play guy for a basketball game on Saturday? Just say yes. It's an awesome opportunity. Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
It's a lot harder than it looks. I remember one time back when I was in a newspaper life, one of my friends, I think it was Robert Fish, was doing high school games around here, and he asked me to, he was doing them by himself. And so he asked me to, if I wasn't doing anything, to jump in the press box with him and just add some color analyst stuff. And man, that was challenging. It was, it was really, really hard just to be able to come up with, observations that weren't just baloney, and I mean, you're live and on the spot, and you don't want dead air in your broadcast. So I admire anybody like you who can do that stuff, because it challenges not only your knowledge, but your ability to think quickly and make acute observations and be on top of things. It's a lot more challenging than it looks out there in radio land and TV land.
Yeah. Our colleague, Scott German, usually when we're not on press row together, sitting on row two, you, I, and him side by side, basically, when we're watching games on TV, Scott will often text me. And among the things he'll text me about is how bad the announcers are in this game. I'm hoping that I don't get texts from him during the game tomorrow telling me how bad I am. because he can be pretty brutal as far as that goes. He might wait until after the game to tell me. But anyway, now 1 o'clock tomorrow, VMI, ETSU, and then look to our websites, jerryratcliffe.com, augustafreepress.com tomorrow night. I know Jerry tweets during the game as well. So his insights during the game on Twitter, and then our post game tomorrow night. We'll be both up late pretty well tomorrow night covering UVA Notre Dame. So a fun, busy Saturday of college basketball coming up.
Yeah, and if you haven't kept up with the recruiting, just go to the sites and give you all the detail that you want to know on, and update you on all the not goings this time around, but comings for Virginia football recruits. And keep your eye on our gal, Danielle Collins, man. She's in the Australian Open Championship, 3:30 this morning if you want to stay up that late and cheer her on, she's if she wins it, she'll become the only female in history, tennis history, to win an NCAA singles championship and a Grand Slam professional championship for women. I think John McEnroe is the only man to accomplish that feat. So she'll be in some high cotton there if she is able to pull that off. But nevertheless, the fact she's there is pretty cool. She's an intense, fiery girl. I've got to watch her play some at UVA. I know she appreciates her Wahoo support. So pull for her if you're up at 3:30. If not, maybe they'll have a rerun later in the day on the tennis channel or wherever it's going to be. I'm not sure what channel it's going to be on. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, I think it's ESPN. And
I think it is ESPN.
For those of us who don't stay up till 3:30 a.m., you'll probably wake up to the news. Hopefully the news that we all want, which is a grand slam for a who. So Daniel Collins tonight, overnight. And they'll probably replay it during the waking hours for most Americans, just especially because there's an American in it. But so adding that to our sports Saturday, yeah, there's a lot going on.
It's one of my goals to get her on our show, Chris. I think we'll get her on sometime this year.
Hey, get her on if and when she wins tonight. Let's get her on soon and recount the experience of Australia. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Jerry Ratcliffe finds out how to get we get all these great guests. So I don't doubt that we'll have her sooner rather than later as far as that goes.
Hope so.
Well, for Jerry Ratcliffe, I am Chris Graham signing off. Everyone have a great weekend.